News Radio 1180, WHLM, to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180, WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 8th of October, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Give us a call at the numbers you just heard our glorious announcer say, and we'll be to the phones as soon as we can. First, however, the news. Microsoft has delivered Vista's final test version. On Friday, Microsoft released what we all hope will be the last test version of Windows Vista before the product goes to manufacturing. It's Windows Release Candidate 2, RC2, or build number 5744. Participants in the customer preview program, Tech Beta, Tech Nat, Technology Adoption Program, and MSDN members also got it. The previous release of Vista RC1 received excellent feedback, according to the Microsoft people, from an estimated 3 million people who tested it. The company is using that feedback to put the finishing touches on the quality and performance of the operating system. They say they're still on target to release it to customers next month and to consumers in January. Business customers get it next month. Consumers get it in January, just in time to miss the Christmas season, although the company continues to give itself an out by saying that quality is more important than hitting a date. The release of Vista has, of course, already been delayed several times over the last 4 years. And Dave, you've been playing with it a little bit.
Yeah, I happened to get a copy of the Vista, the beta. And all I can say is those 3 million were saying, you know, their feedback is don't do it.
Yeah, if you have a computer now,
running
XP, don't put Vista on it. It's not strong enough, and most of your applications aren't going to work.
I found more things that wouldn't work with Vista than would, and they're working fine right now with XP. One of the programs, just for an example, WinFax works fine. It worked back to when I had Windows 95. You know, I had older versions of WinFax, and right on up to the last version that they made, still worked fine under XP. Well, under Vista, forget it. It's gone. A lot of the other programs that are out there, I mean, McAfee, of course, had a beta version of the McAfee that'll be out for Vista when that comes. But here's the key thing, though, and not to slam Microsoft or anything else like that. All right, you're going to get this whole new product, but a lot, and I mean a lot, of your current software that you're using will not work in Vista. It's a known fact. You're going to have to pay more money to update those other programs to get them Vista compatible. And I mean, that's even right down, as you and I were talking before the show, games.
Especially, which tend to take liberties with the OS.
More importantly, Microsoft has announced that games will run 10 to 15% slower under Vista than they do under XP.
And you should buy an Xbox 360 instead.
Right. Yeah. That's their point.
So they're maybe that's intentional.
Yep.
I wound up having the Vista on the machine for one day, and it got to be so annoying. I mean, we got a pretty decent machine with 2 gig of memory in it. And be honest with you, other than, you know, the icons and that being a little more gooier and all that, ooh and ah and that, there wasn't much difference between Vista and XP.
Well, they've had to take so much stuff out to meet their current, you know, self-imposed non-deadline.
Right. And really the only thing left in Vista, well, there's a bunch of security stuff, but from the user's point of view, the only thing left is the eye candy.
Yeah, and that's...
Oh, and by the way, several people have emailed me over the last couple of weeks with problems with Release Candidate 1 and Vista. I don't answer those questions. I don't answer a lot of questions that just randomly come to me out of nowhere, but I don't answer those questions because I'm not Microsoft. I don't have any insight into why you can't get online or why your video doesn't work or why
Vista,
something crashed.
Yeah, because Vista is a beta and it won't work. So
it's
the answer to your question is yes.
Yes, it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do, which is crash. When it does, you provide that feedback to Microsoft and move on. You don't get it fixed. They fix it eventually or not. That's their choice.
Yeah, they got to sit there and compile all the things that they're going to work on.
Right.
And then it'll come out in one patch, and that's part of beta testing.
The early adopters, the typical traditional computer geeks who want to play with the latest technology will let them do it. We've joked for years. You can tell the pioneers by their arrows in their back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let them play with it for a while, and for the average folk, hold off on it. In fact, we've had a lot of customers buying XP machines now to make sure they can still get XP, because as soon as Vista is released, XP is discontinued.
Right.
And you may not be able to buy an XP machine after January, February next year.
Right. Well, and of course, then there's all the other interesting stuff that Microsoft is doing with Vista. For example, one of the things that they're doing is software protection. We'll talk about that a little later. That has interesting implications. But there's a bunch of stuff that Vista is going to have on it that that you need to think long and hard about before you decide that's something you want to do. We're going to go to the phones. And our first caller is Jonathan from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Jonathan. What's your question?
Okay. My son has a PC clone, and he complains that if you leave the computer on for too long sometimes, then it turns off, and it's very hard to restart. One question I have is the on-off button on it, literally. Can you use that to just turn it off?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, yeah. You hold it in for about 10 seconds,
yeah,
and it turns the computer off.
Oh, maybe that, because I was going to say the other thing is that I press it and nothing happens. I didn't realize you had to hold it down for 10
seconds. Yeah,
is this a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Check to see whether or not he's got it going into hibernation in any way. Hibernation or sleep mode. The problem is most desktops do not correctly do hibernation or sleep mode.
Well, they go in okay, they just won't come out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, that, yes. All right. Yes. And that's
so
why they don't
fine.
Correctly do. Right. All right. They don't unhibernate or wake well.
Yeah.
So if you have set your desktop to do that, the chances are very good that they, in fact, will have the exact problem you're having.
Yeah. Go
they
into
turn off after a while and have trouble turning on again.
In the control panel under energy savings or power options, look in that and set them all to never.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, and all. I've missed saying that. And all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
That all you good liberals who lead us to the re-education.
Welcome back to Soundbites, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be getting back to your phone calls in just a minute, so give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, the number is 222-1180. If you're outside that 585 area code, of course, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And you Verizon Wireless customers can just hit *1180. We'll get to the phones in just a second, but
before we do that, one last thought for the previous caller. Another possibility it could be is he said it would run for a while and then turn off and not turn back on. It may be overheating. Check your fans. Clean all the dust out of them. Make sure the fans are running. If the computer overheats, all computers have a thermistor. Ooh.
Love it when you talk dirty.
Yeah. So if the computer overheats, it shuts itself down before too much damage is done, and then it won't turn back on until it's cool enough to not damage itself. So that could be the problem, too.
I had one just this past week. Literally, on top of the CPU sits these, they look like fins.
Yeah, the radiator fins for the heat sink.
Yeah, it looks like a huge radiator, and then the fan on top of that. Well, all the fins were literally packed with dirt.
Caked solid.
And the fins on the fan had a buildup on them, and all around the wall of it was just solid dust and buildup.
Ew.
Smokers are the worst, though.
I had to take
and their computers, it's horrible, and it's sticky, so it won't come out.
Right.
Well, the buildup, though, after it filled up, the fans just kept building up around it. I took it outside to blow it out, and my wife thought I was the machine was on fire. Because there was so much smoke and dirt coming out. Is that machine okay? Because she was just coming from the garage. I says, yeah, it's just dirty. Because I thought it was on fire.
Yeah, yeah. You got to keep them clean, and it's that's hard. You know, we have I have cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And that makes it very tough. But you got to keep them clean.
One of the worst things we actually see if in this respect is when you put your computer on the floor, then it picks up all the carpet dust or floor dust, and when you vacuum around it, if you vacuum around it, the blower from the vacuum cleaner gets in the computer.
Yeah.
You know, lift it up if you want to put it under your desk. You know, put it on a shoebox or on something.
Well, maybe not a shoebox, but
Something.
They make little lifter trays.
Yeah. Or a couple pieces of 2x4.
A couple of 2x4s, a cement block maybe, just to get it up off the floor. And there are companies that make an under the desk mount, so it actually mounts to the underneath of the top of the desk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some of them
hangs down.
Some of them have sliders so you can pull the whole computer out like a tray and get to the plug holes in the back that you really need to all the time.
Well, because the computer is technically a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, it sucks all the air in the front
and blowing it out the back. So if the dirt's flowing around the house and you can't help it, especially, like you said, you're walking up to your computer and that, airflow is being drawn into the computer, all the dust and everything else that you got on the floor or anything else is going to be sucked right on in.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Syracuse, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi. Hi. I've just got a question. I've got a Windows Media Center 2004 edition TV. Mm-hmm. It crashed, and there's no way I can get anything back. I don't even have the discs, and I know you guys talk about backup and recovery. I'm guilty. So here's what I need to do. I need to buy a new computer. Mm-hmm. And I'm using just basic, I've got a digital camera. I'll just take some pictures. I just want to store them. Maybe get some music. I'll use either iTunes or Windows Media Player.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any advantages or disadvantages? I'm thinking of maybe going to Windows XP Professional. I use it at work. I'm familiar with it. Is there anything that Media Center gives me that Professional would?
Well, wait a minute. I think I can save you even a little bit more money. This is going to be for a home computer?
Yeah, home computer, but the computer I have now is like a TV tuner in it, so I still like that.
That's the advantage of Media Center. It comes with a TV tuner. It comes with the software to run your television and turn your computer into a television.
Then, I would go. You can. That's all supported under Professional also.
Okay, so I can go Windows XP Professional and then just have them put that in if I go to a company like a Dell or
You may even be able to take the TV tuner card out of the old computer, put it into the new one, if you can find what brand and model card it is and get drivers for it.
It was a Sony Vaio that crashed. So
it's a laptop.
Yeah. No, desktop.
Dude, that's desktop Vaios too. Sometimes I just ran into this with Adele. You don't get the restore disks with the computer, but there's a hidden partition in the computer, and if you boot with a special key down, you can restore the original OS.
Okay. Now, cost-wise, is it more efficient to go with the Media Center edition or for the XP Professional in terms of what I really want to do?
Go with Professional.
Well, the only difference is going to be what it might cost you to buy
the TV card and software.
If you can pull the card out of the old machine and put it in the new machine and you buy Media Center, the theory is it should recognize it. But even so, you may need to download a driver from Sony.
And the thing with the media version was very component specific.
Right, that's what one of my concerns was.
The list was very limited in exactly what it would allow to use as far as sound cards to take advantage of a lot of stuff in the video cards and the tuner cards.
Right.
It had a very limited list, whereas XP Professional is a bigger list.
Right,
so
you can add all that stuff and add all those cards into XP separately. The Media Center gave you a unified program for accessing your photos and your music and your movies and everything and the television.
So I could go with XP Professional, see if my card works. If it doesn't, go back to where I bought the computer and say, hey, I'm looking for a TV tuner card, which would work, and then I can go with that option.
Yeah
the ATI All in Wonder cards are very common for TV tuners.
Yep.
Okay.
And that may even be what the card is in the computer now.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just found Media Center to be a little bit confusing with the Sony proprietary software and then the other software that you have with Windows. I just want a quick and easy sort of thing to do. I want a picture. I want to see it. So I'm guessing maybe I should go toward XP Professional. Then.
Sounds right to me.
Yep.
All right. Okay,
good luck.
Good luck. It's an interesting. This is one of the problems Microsoft has had from the beginning. They've fragmented their market, trying to be all things to all people. They fragmented their market, and that's causing them to have there's kind of confusion out in the marketplace. Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back. It's time for the news. We're going to have news. We're going to have weather. We're going to have sports. We're going to have Rob Jason in to give you all of that stuff. That's the important stuff. It's what goes on out in the big blue room that so many of you never, ever get out in. But this is your chance to find out what goes on out there on a daily basis. It's kind of your window out into the real world. But we will be back at the other side of that with a whole lot more stuff. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We have news, views, stuff you can use, lots of phone calls, lots of news. Back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Ooh, I just feel so informed. Thank you, Rob. We're back. It's Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you are indeed.
You are always informed.
I'm always informed.
You are at the top of the game. You know what I mean?
Thank you. I always have an opinion. I may not know what I'm talking about, but I have an opinion.
We don't even need three steps.
Hi-yo!
All right. Best Buy. Best Buy is launching. Oh, Steve, get ready to laugh. Best Buy is launching an Apple iTunes competitor. They're in cooperation with Real Networks and SanDisk, the Best Buy Digital Music Store, which I believe is an inspired name, powered by Real Networks' Rhapsody 4.0 music service, lets users purchase and permanently download songs and albums, as well as subscribe monthly to listen to an unlimited number of songs. Best Buy will carry and promote the SanDisk Sansa E200R Rhapsody MP3 players, which have been optimized to work with the new music service. Best Buy says the company is differentiating its service from Rhapsody, even though they're using Rhapsody, by offering exclusive artist content. Songs on the Best Buy Digital. Yes. Yes. Now, write this down, because this is kind of important. The songs on Best Buy Digital Music Store will cost 99 cents a piece.
Huh. I wonder where they got that from.
No idea. Monthly subscriptions that allow users to play an unlimited number of songs are only $15 a month. To promote its new service, Best Buy will launch with an exclusive track from recording artist Diddy. The artist, formerly known as 100 other different names, for his new CD, Press Play. The CD will be on sale, of course.
They should have done it one better, in that they should have only charged 98 cents.
98 cents, exactly.
That way they're a penny less.
That's right. That's right.
It's kind of interesting and related news is that Apple and Starbucks have teamed up, so now you can get the iTunes music at Starbucks and Starbucks music at iTunes.
Right. But this is, you know, everybody is suddenly realizing that Apple is a gold mine. Well, I mean, you know, let's face it, a huge percentage of Apple's income comes from iPods and iTunes and all the iStuff. So that other people are suddenly looking around and saying, what did we miss?
Well, the another interesting fact, and I've been trying to find the actual news article on it, that the iTunes Music Store is like number five for music sales, including brick and mortar stores.
Yes.
So they sell more music on the iTunes Store than Best Buy does in their own stores.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I think Walmart was number one.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting fact that Apple announced a couple of weeks ago, that their electronic store is now competing with regular brick and mortar stores. People aren't going to a physical store to buy music anymore.
Right. Of course, the big thing is you can only play that stuff on an iPod.
You can play it on
easily.
Easily, right. You can play it on other music players by burning it to a CD and then re-ripping it into a different player. Right.
But basically, it's designed...
Well, and that's exactly the same problem with every other music store. You can only play Rhapsody music on a Windows Media Player machine unless you burn it to CD, which is the biggest issue with the Napster and Rhapsody services is the subscription service. If you stop paying your subscription fee, all the music you've downloaded quits working.
Right.
And for most of the songs, yeah, the 99 cents per song, if you want to burn it to a CD, you have to pay another fee to burn it to a CD.
Right.
So there's a lot of little hidden gotchas in this type of service that you have to keep track of.
Right. All right, our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well. Hey, listen, I got a Windows XP box and cannot get to a DOS prompt. When I type in CMD in the run box window there at the bottom, it tells me CMD is not a Win32 application.
Sounds like it got corrupted somehow.
Yeah, you got a corrupted machine there.
Or a virus.
Well, I'm up to date on my virus definitions of using Norton antivirus and ran all the securities and all the spyware stuff, and nothing's coming up.
Okay.
And also, I can run, now if I type in, for example, if I type in a ipconfig release, sometimes my DSL modem drops connection, I need to do that a couple times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those windows will come up, so the DOS screen will open, except for I can't just get a full DOS screen by typing the cmd command.
Try command, the full
word. Yeah, well, you type in cmd into the run box.
Right, yeah, type the full word command and see if that one works.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's possible that what do they call it in Windows? The DLL library is corrupted and you can't open the window by itself, but sending a command to it will execute that command.
Well,
and
that,
close
that
the
tells
window.
Me the DLL works. It's the cmd.exe that's corrupted.
Yeah.
One thing you can try is if you have someone you know who has exactly the same version of Windows.
Including service packs and updates and installation.
Well, the command file, though, I don't think changed on...
Well, I don't think well, either,
as long as it's XP Professional with Service Pack 2...
Yeah, it should be fine. Right? You should be able to copy somebody else's cmd.exe, put it in your machine in the same place. You have to do that as the administrator.
Right? Or system 32 directory.
Right, wherever it comes from. I'm running a Linux box at the moment, so I don't know where it comes from. Yeah, I think that's where it is. Make sure that you put it back in exactly the same place. Then I would suggest rebooting.
Oh, yeah.
just to be on the safest of safe sides, and then see what happens.
Although, yeah, I think you're good. What you can do is, because there's different, the command file
restore
itself.
Restore it from the cabs. Even.
You can restore it from the cabs, which is under the i386 folder, if that's on your machine.
Yeah, it is, and I have the original CDs, too.
Yeah, you can extract it from the i386. Just extract that one file.
Interesting. You know, this all started happening after I gave the wonderful IE 7.0 beta a shot, and that just made life a nightmare.
That's why they tell it's beta. Yeah.
Never
it's
beta. Never
yeah, well, I installed it and redid everything. The only reciprocating or the only thing that seems to be persistent that I haven't brought back to normal is that Win32.
One thing you might want to...
It may have loaded a new version and didn't unload it.
Yeah, right? One thing you could do, though, here's a thought, though. If you've got any of your restore points still saved...
Yeah, I don't have that turned on.
That's where sometimes it's good to have it, you know, because then you could have gone back just before you did that.
Yeah, I guess that's just we all know what a memory hog Windows is. That's just
hey.
And viruses hide in there, too.
You know, like I say, you're one...
Darned if you do,
darned if you don't.
So I remember in previous versions of Windows, you used to be able to restore the baseline files off of from the add and remove programs.
System,
you can't do that.
Well, the system file checker, you could run SFC at the command prompt and see if that works.
Yeah, okay.
But you can't get to a command prompt.
Well,
you can do run
in the run.
SFC.
Yeah, the run.
SFC.
Yeah.
Type it in a run box, right?
Yeah.
Right, and see if that'll run and restore the damaged file.
Give it a shot.
Let's do that first. That sounds like a good choice. All right. Give that a try and let us know. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. Rock on. Rock on, Rob. And each and every one of you, don't forget, give us a call on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham.
They put a price tag.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to Soundbite.
Just chatty, chatty,
never
chatty,
stops
chatty.
Here, yeah.
Well, I'm so used to the music leading in. I was explaining, I went and saw the Blue Men.
Yeah.
And how this one guy, one part of the routine, they kept throwing these balls, and he kept catching them. The other guy kept catching them. And, I mean, his mouth looked like it was going to explode.
Because he was catching them in his mouth. Dave left that part out.
Yeah, he was catching them in his mouth, and all of a sudden he formed this big mountain of, it looked like a foam.
Marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
That's what it was, yeah.
And then they sold it for $4,000 as famous art.
Nice. Nice work if you
can
get it.
But it was to give it back to this woman who they used, pretendingly, using her charge card to sign up for this course, $4,000.
Nice. This is Patch Tuesday coming up. It's Microsoft's monthly visitor will be around. So there's going to be a bunch of security flaw fixes for both Windows and Office. This one's important, folks. 11 security updates are coming on Tuesday, and hackers are already exploiting these vulnerabilities. So please, please don't forget to patch this Tuesday. Critical flaws are out there that attackers are exploiting, and they can even be exploited with no action on the part of the user. So this is not one of those deals where you have to click on something or open an email or do any of that stuff. It can all happen behind your back. Six of the patches are going to be for Windows, four for Office. Hackers have been keeping the Microsoft Security Response Center busy this last month, so make sure you definitely do it. In fact, they've been so busy that last week Microsoft issued a rare out-of-cycle security patch after criminals began exploiting a flaw in Internet Explorer's VML rendering engine. Security experts have also warned of cyber attacks based on unpatched flaws in PowerPoint, Word, and an ActiveX control called Web View Folder Icon. So at least the Web View Folder Icon flaw will be patched on Tuesday. So please, please make sure you update this week on Tuesday when the latest monthly patches come out. All right, our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Okay, I was fooling around and downloaded a program called Quarterdeck. Actually, it was from a disc that was in some dumb book I was reading.
Uh-huh.
Quarterdeck. So it goes through, it starts checking my computer, and it has changed everything over, as far as I can determine, to Windows NT. I used to be running XP. Now it's running in NT. I went into the...
That's impossible.
Huh? Wow, how
weird
is that?
Yeah, that's impossible.
Well, listen, I went into the system information box there under accessories, and it shows that my operating system on one box says Windows XP. Mm-hmm. In another one, it shows that it's it says software environment. Under environment variables, it's listed as the OS is Windows, that bottom slash NT.
Well, there's a compatibility mode where the OS XP can tell programs to run in a different version of Windows, but the version can't change.
Okay.
So it's something has screwed up your computer really bad.
Well, now, where was this piece of software you loaded?
Quarterdeck used to be a publishing company.
Windows Networking for Dummies. And then after it had checked everything, a box came up and said, Windows 95, 98, NT runs. It's all that it checks or something, and an incredible amount of things to do to change it over to XP, I think, but I'm not sure, because at that point I freaked and said, I don't want it. It asked if I wanted to remove DLLs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here's the problem that we have. Quarterdeck went out of business.
Years ago.
In 1998.
Well, Symantec bought them.
Sure.
And killed all their products.
Right. So what you've loaded may well be something that never knew about XP.
I'm almost positive that's the case.
Yeah, it didn't.
Yeah.
So, first, never do that again.
Book's in the trash.
Burn that book.
Well, the concepts were probably similar to what XP does now, but the specific programs
to
run.
But what should have been?
How do we fix this? Is the next question.
Reinstall XP, probably.
Or unless he's got a restore point.
No, I've tried restoring it.
Reinstall Windows over Windows, which isn't really that hard. I mean, you put
if
the
you
CD
have the disk,
in.
Yeah.
I don't have the disk, so I have to go out and buy XP, which doesn't. If I just get XP home, it's not that expensive, which that's what I thought I'm going to have to do.
You never got a CD with your machine?
It's a long story.
Then there's probably, there could be a restore partition on your hard drive where the install files are embedded in this partition, and you hit like F12 on boot up, and it starts the restore partition. Some of the computers have a restore where it just loads Windows again, but most of them are erase the hard drive and restore it as if you just bought it.
Yeah, you might as well just go and get it, and then that way you'll have it, Jim. And matter of fact, you can get start fresh, and any of them that you buy now will be the Service Pack 2.
Uh-huh.
So you can just load everything fresh and chuck it off to a learning experience.
Sorry.
So, yeah, it's...
That's something to be careful of for all computer users, Mac and Windows. That a lot of times you go to stores and they have the bargain bin of software, $5 to get a disk full of software. Make sure you look at the system requirements on that, because most of them, and, which is a little confusing too. Most of them will say, you know, Windows 98 or later, because it didn't know how much the changes were in 2000 and XP.
Right. Unless it specifically says XP,
probably
don't go
not
there.
A good idea to run it, on, especially on your main production box.
Right, exactly. we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back to Soundbites, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
It's 53 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 222-1180 in the 585 area code. Outside that area code, it's the Choice One toll-free line at 800-295-1180. And, of course, all you Verizon Wireless customers, you can call us at Star 1180. Back to the phones, Keith from Victor, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
Gentlemen,
who came in?
Comments. One thing I like about Frontier is if you have a power outage, you still have internet access.
Isn't that nice?
And I don't care how much the Roadrunner advertises the contrary. I lose power more than I lose phone service.
Yeah.
Well, it's that you put your should put your router and your computer on a UPS anyway.
Stop it. Go ahead, Keith.
All right. The other thing, I'm surprised you guys didn't mention anything about what Google's offering free. It's called Google Sketch.
Yeah.
We talked about that two months ago when we demoed it at the Apple Cider Users Group. We talked about it then.
Yeah, pretty neat little product, isn't it?
You know, the whole thing, it's great, especially, it makes CAD understandable, but I always wondered what was Google's reasoning behind it, and when you can take the images and basically turn 2D images from Google Earth into 3D images now, and that's why they came up with it, because I saw pictures of the Eiffel Tower all sketched out with the way it looks, and it was unbelievable.
Well, some
for
of
those
is...
of you who don't know, Google SketchUp, it's called SketchUp, is a free, easy-to-use 3D modeling program. Lets you create 3D models, houses, sheds, decks, home additions, stuff like that, spaceships, anything you want to build. You can even place them then on Google Earth, put them in the 3D warehouse, print hard copies. Pretty neat little product.
But the one thing I found out is when I was playing it, and I started out with your basic cube, and you're doing all the little things, and you're learning how to do the textures and how to turn it into a wire and make it out of glass. I felt like a little kid playing with blocks again.
Yeah, yep.
It was really cool in that respect.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It is only for we Unix people. We're left out. It's only for 2000 and XP under Windows and Mac OS 10.3.9 or up under the Mac.
What's interesting is the culture at Google. Employees are required to spend part of their day not working on their assigned
one
work.
Day a week.
Yep. And they're supposed to just do other stuff, and this is one of those things that came out. In fact, if you go to the betalabs.google.com,
yep.
You can see all of the weird little projects that people are working on, and some of them might turn into something real, but it's just you're supposed to play at something else other than your assigned work.
Keith, that's great that you brought that up. Thanks. That's it's a pretty neat thing. And in fact, you can see all of that stuff if you go to Google. You'll see across the, you go to your regular Google web page, and across the top it'll say web, images, video, news, maps, and more. Click on more and click on even more, and you can see a whole bunch of stuff that Google does. You know, Google, everybody talks about Microsoft. Man, Google is going to own the world.
Well,
there
actually,
is
you
no
have,
question.
You have that news story this week? They just bought YouTube.
Yep. They bought YouTube for $1.6 billion with a B dollars. Pretty astonishing. Google truly will own the world at some point. Our next caller is Tom from Walcott, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, you?
Good. My problem is with a boot up. When I press a button to start the computer, the things start chugging along, and it seems like it's trying to go to the CD disk for a boot disk there.
Right.
Okay, and then nothing happens. Just sits there, keeps doing that over and over again. So I hit the reset button, and then I'll get some post beeps. And then if I do that a couple times, then hold the button, shut it off, wait 10 seconds, turn it back on, then it'll usually boot to a window, and it's a DOS type window that says check some bad your attempt at overclocking has failed. Now, this is a brand new system that I just had built by a little local company here.
That's good news.
Yeah.
You take it back to them and
because
tell
it's
them
still
to,
under warranty and it's broken.
They've apparently tried to overclock the CPU so that it's running faster than it's meant to. And some CPUs can do that and some CPUs can't.
So how did this even get out the door?
It worked.
It's a 2.0 and they clock it to 2.1 and
they might not have. In the resetting, sometimes I've seen it reset itself.
It was working until about last week, and I, I've been loading software and stuff that I want on there and stuff like that. I tried to go back and do a restore point back, a couple weeks and stuff like that, and it won't take any.
What was the last thing you loaded?
Before this happened for the first time, I think it was my. The codec for my picture, my
you also mentioned you were getting some error beeps at post. You may need to define what those error beeps are in the manuals, because that could be telling you bad RAM, bad hard drive, bad logic board, bad CPU. Those error beeps
mean something.
The
bottom line here, Tom, is you've got a brand new machine that's not running.
Take it
right back to them and tell them make it right, because you're definitely still under warranty. We have to take a break, but luckily for each and every one of you, Rob Jason is in to inform us as to what's going on in the real world. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. You know what that show is. Now listen, when you get back from the news, we're going to be here, so you give us a call. 222-1180, 800-295-1180, *1180 for Verizon Wireless customers. You know these numbers. So you should be using them. We need to get you people on the line. We're going to answer your questions. We're going to do what you need to do. People call at the last minute, and then, you know, we get 10, 12 calls lined up at the very end of the show, and we can't get to them all, and I feel bad. Call earlier this time. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
And they probably will. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And Nick will be back in just a couple minutes.
Welcome back to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
One thing that we were talking about before, though, and we can probably go on this, because you and I will probably see it a lot, Steve, is with right now the folks thinking about holiday machines. I mean, it is already, into October, second week of October, and they're starting to wonder about the various deals and all that stuff that are going to be around, hopefully, for the holidays. I mean, they are starting to push the dual core. This is basically, folks, two processors on one chip. They've also introduced a quad.
Which is, right now the shipping quads are two processors with two cores each.
Right.
Eventually, though, the quad core will be shipping.
But, again, these are all newer machines that, if you can get into them, it wouldn't hurt, because then down the road, if and when you want to switch to Vista, you could do it. But, again, the requirements for Vista are going to be quite high. So with this in mind, if you're thinking of getting a machine for the holidays, you're going to want to get at least a 256 meg video card. I'd say a 200 gig hard drive, of course a DVD burner, 2 gig of memory, anything bigger and better. Because, it's going to take advantage of it, as we've been saying right from day one for Windows XP. Windows XP will take advantage of any memory you throw at it. So if you're thinking towards the holidays and getting a machine, go bigger, because down the road, because Vista isn't going to be released to you folks until after the first of the year. And if you want to try it out, excuse me, you're going to need this power. So kind of keep that in mind if you're kind of getting the thoughts around getting a new machine for the holidays.
And the dual core machines, which use the Intel Core Duo or Core 2 Duo, are really neat and really zippy to have mm-hmm. two processors in a consumer level machine. It used to be only high end workstations and servers. And it goes back to one of our earlier callers. He just wants a basic computer, and I'm going to do some photos and maybe a little video. You know, what's basic has changed so much is that dual-core processor really helps now. You can be ripping a CD and editing a movie, or you know, surfing the web and watching a video.
Yeah.
Because you've got two processors now to do everything twice as fast, or be able to do two things at the full speed.
Yep. Right. And talking about Vista, by the way, this takes us to our...
Good segue.
Good segue. Takes us to our poll this week. Every week we do a poll on the Soundbites website. Last week's poll was about how much extra would you pay for a green Apple. This talked about people wanting Microsoft or Apple to be even more environmentally conscious than they are. 84% of you said you wouldn't pay anything extra for a green Apple out of 264 people voting, which, by the way, made it number 199 in the all-time hit list. Thank you all so much. This week's poll has to do with Microsoft's software protection plan. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to read my... I do a blog entry, set of blog entries on the Security Tango website.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. Microsoft has introduced a wonderful new program for us. It's called the Software Protection Platform. But as with all cases of doublespeak, it doesn't mean what it seems to mean. The Software Protection Platform is built into Vista. When you buy a new computer with Vista on it, or when you put Vista on your current machine, you'll have a 30-day grace period to register Vista with a legitimate registration key. If you don't, Microsoft locks you out of Vista. It's not like you own Vista or anything. You just licensed it to use a copy.
That's the same thing they're doing now with the Windows activation.
Right.
If you don't activate it within 30 days, it stops running, even though you paid
right.
for it.
Right. But once you're locked out, you still have a whole hour to use your web browser to register. A whole hour. Is that great or what? You can beat that, by the way. For that 30-day grace period, Microsoft is sending you little warnings about registering. Lots of little warnings. But wait, there's more. Microsoft, even after you register, every time you do any sort of update, Microsoft will continue to check your system. It will rummage around your hard drive, making sure you haven't suddenly become a thief. If you have, or more accurately, if Microsoft suspects you have, you'll find yourself right back in that 30-day grace period with all the warnings, and you'll have reduced functionality, which basically means you won't be able to update any of Microsoft's security products. So that also occurs if you change certain elements in your system. So you have to be very careful once you buy Vista that you don't make any major changes to your system. Get everything you're going to want up front, because if you add too much stuff or change too many things, you may find yourself calling Microsoft and begging them to reinstate you as a legitimate user. Anyway, that leads us to our poll of the week, which is, I think Microsoft's proposed software protection plan. They call it a software protection plan. That's doublespeak. The only people they're protecting are themselves.
Yeah.
I think the plan is marvelous, useful, painful, but necessary. The last straw. Who cares? I use a Mac. And we Linux people laugh and continue to download everything for free. So far, we have 66 votes. 35% of you say it's the last straw. 26% of you say we Linux people laugh. So that's what you can do here at the Soundbites website. I would send you there for after that. There's a little box underneath there that that will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. I'll be moving over to Soleil in a moment, because Ask Nick is at the moment down. We're working to get it back up again, but at the moment it's not actually running. That is, I'm sure, somehow my fault. I've done something rude somewhere last night, but I'll get it all fixed and up and running shortly. But in the meantime, check out what goes on at our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like just to remind you. Click the contacts tab and you'll see all of us. Click the links tab and you'll see the archive, the podcasts, the site of the sites we mentioned on the show, all that other stuff. Check out our FAQs. Of course, you can go to our shop and by All Things Soundbites here, and naturally the forums where some of the coolest people on earth hang out. So check them all out at soundbites.org. In the meantime, we will go back to the phones and we will talk to Dave from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi. Recently I transferred all my old videos to DVDs, and I've got about 50 of them now, DVDs, and I'm hearing, though, that they don't have the shelf life that I might have hoped, that they may be good for only about 10 years.
Depends on what media you had them archived onto. If you use the Kodak Gold archival media, they'll last for 100 years. If you use cheap media, it will last for a year.
These are just plain Imation DVD plus Rs.
Imation is a good brand. If you keep them stored flat, not on edge, if you didn't write on them with a permanent marker.
I used a Sharpie.
Nah, that's bad. Yeah. See, that eventually will eat through the plastic.
If it smells good, it's bad.
Yeah.
Right.
The alcohol in it.
Yeah, they make CD markers specifically without acetone that will safely write on CD media.
But this Kodak Gold will last for a long time.
It's KPM Media Inc. Sells them.
Yep.
It's the Kodak Gold standard. It's guaranteed. Well, guaranteed. The lifetime is 80 to 100 years.
Yeah, DVDs are rated for 100 years, CDs for 300 years.
Oh, great. So if I just transfer all these to that format, I'll be good.
There you go.
Well, now, the other question is, in 10 or 20 years, are we going to have DVD players that will still work?
Yeah.
So, every 5 years or so, you need to re-archive everything on the new current medium.
Get it to the next generation.
Because all our VHSs are now DVD, and then DVD is going to get replaced with either Blu-ray or HD DVD, and who knows what's going to be next.
Yeah, but always there will be...
something better.
Well, but always there will be regular storage, disk storage, hard disk storage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to get yourself a really large hard drive, stick it in one of those USB cases, even if later on you then have to stick it in a FireWire case or in an ultra super whoopee port case or whatever that happens to be.
eSATA is currently the bestest.
Right. But that should always work.
I have about 100 hours of video. Is there anything that could hold that much on one hard drive?
Nothing you'd be willing to buy.
Right.
Well, the single largest hard drive now is 750 gigabytes, but you can raid them together and get up to 16 terabytes on most systems.
Right. But in your case, DVD is great. Just make sure that every few years you check them and redo them.
Yep.
Yeah, the name brand discs are the best to use. The free after rebate are fine for handing something to somebody that they may not want in a week.
Quick and dirties,
He's using the Imations. That's a good brand name. It's well known, so he can he should get 8 to 10 years out of it.
Yeah,
but after a few years, as soon as he buys the next big thing, whether it's Blu-ray or whatever it is, he should transfer stuff to that. And of course, he'll use fewer discs then, since Blu-ray holds so much more. And then on and on and on. But you can't. You can't just put, I've got stuff on floppy disks, and I just realized the new machine you just built me doesn't even have a floppy disk.
Right.
I don't use it.
They're optional.
I didn't know. I don't need it.
Most people don't
use now, most of them now we're replacing the floppy drive with a 42-in-1 card reader.
Yep. Which is what I've got. 42, I don't even have 42 media. I just want you to know. I don't even have 42 media. What am I going to do with that?
Yep. Hey, you never know.
Yeah, email has replaced floppies for most people.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can get all kinds of online storage. You can email stuff to yourself at your Google address and save 2 gigabytes worth of stuff up there. So it's all doable. You just have to know what you're doing. Our next caller is Jay from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Jay. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, and you?
Good, thanks. Toshiba laptop, when I boot the laptop, it just seems to hang. I booted it in safe mode and see what prompts were being loaded, and it's hanging at AGP440.sys. Any suggestions?
AGP440?
Yeah, it's getting stopped there. What you've got to do is, if it's even hanging up in safe mode, is reload the operating system over itself. So I know the connection is pretty poor here, Jay, but what you want to do is find your original CD, put it in, and reload Windows over itself. And other than that, you're...
Hopefully that'll work.
Yeah, that's what he's got to do, because if it's not even... That's normally where it stops, if it's not going to load in even safe mode, the AGP. It's a simple video driver. It's trying to get just to that, and it's having issues. So try doing the install over itself, and that should solve your problem.
There you go. All right, and there's actually a Microsoft note on that and how to fix it. We'll get that loaded up in a little bit. All right, our next caller, Grace from Ontario, New York. Hanging,
hi, how are you?
Good. Apparently not all that good, Grace. You're in Ontario, New York. Thank you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yes. I have an XP, and several weeks ago, my son moved back to RIT, and he had a special DSL wireless hookup that was in place.
Yep.
He took that off, and I then reinstalled a DSL wireless item that I had, and I have no sound now. When I open up my emails in my AOL or go to play something, I'm not getting any sound. I went into the control panel and I checked everything at those sound settings. I went into the AOL and I checked those sound settings, and everything appears to be in. So then I pulled the tower out and I checked all the wires and cables.
Yeah, that's the most common problem is when you're plugging different things in back there, you get the speakers plugged into the microphone port.
Yeah,
the speakers
go into the little green port in the back.
Right. I've got a green little cover on it.
Now, down in the lower right-hand corner, is there a little icon in the tray there that looks like a speaker?
On the screen.
Yep.
And if you click on that and open that.
Yeah, your volume could be muted.
Check and see.
I did check, and that wasn't muted.
Make sure your speakers are turned on. You get the green power light on the speakers.
Hold on. We got to take a break.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, but stay on the line, Grace, and we'll talk to you when we come back. And just the other side of this, it's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Home. It's the Wham Vibe.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm quitting. Bye.
Bye-bye. So long. Thanks for joining.
I'm Rob Linton.
Thanks for playing the game. It's 23 minutes after the hour. This is Sound Bites. Either we hung up on Grace or Grace hung up on us. Grace, I wanted to know what kind of DSL wireless drivers you installed. I'm a little confused about that. But
usually it shouldn't interfere with the sound card.
I don't even know what drivers you have to install.
What she's got to do is blame her son, get him back, and tell him to fix it.
See, that's one of the big things that we run into a lot at Jesse Group with the service side of things. You buy DSL or cable internet, and it comes with a disc. You don't need the disc. You plug the Ethernet in, and there you go. The disc is an easy setup assistant to help you put, say, a password on your wireless router, things like that. But you don't need to install everything. Your PC already comes with all of the internet software. Now, you may want to install the security software they give you. But you don't need to install any drivers to get DSL or cable internet to work. So what we were going with with Grace is that something mechanically, you know, plugged in wrong, the speaker plugged into the mic jack. Make sure your speakers are plugged in and their power is plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
Check the wire at the speaker end. If you have another device like a radio or tape player, try the speakers in that to see if they work.
Right.
And sometimes just try the other connectors in the back of the sound card. I've seen them where they're labeled wrong.
Yes.
Maybe it's not the green one. Maybe it's the black one.
Let's go back a step. Her son disconnected everything and took off. He needs to be slapped hard. He should have checked to make sure the system was still working before he left. I can only hope that he is not in any of the technical programs at RIT, because he is a crappy technician, and I hope he's listening. If he took all that stuff out and didn't make sure her system was working, he's a crappy technician. I'm sorry, it's just the way it works.
Nick, do me a favor. Tell me how you really feel.
I will. This is, he should make sure that she's still up and running.
He broke it, he fixes it.
He broke it, he should come home and fix it. Grace, call him up right now and tell him we said to get his little patoot back home and make the dang thing work. He's just at RIT. It's not like it's a long trip.
What if he's one of your students?
What if he's one of my students? He's flunked. You do not do that. You do not leave the system half undone and wander off somewhere.
Although on the other side, defending both Dave and myself, when we when we repair a system, we look at the symptoms that are given to us.
Yes.
And you know, we fix the whole list of symptoms. If it comes back later with a different problem,
that's a different problem.
But when you unplug everything, you make sure it works.
That's right. When you guys hand a person back a system, you make sure it booted up. You make sure it had internet access.
Yeah.
You make sure it did everything it did when it came in the door.
But when they turn around and they get it home and all of a sudden it comes back and they say, well, this isn't working.
That wasn't one of the symptoms.
That wasn't one thing. Well, don't you check everything?
Not everything. Wait a minute. But you do check to see whether or not she's up and running.
Yeah.
Well, no, this was a software package. It's like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to check every software package on your machine? I don't think so.
Unless you're going to pay us for the 16 extra hours it's going to take.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and then there's the problem with, remember when you built my machine, which, by the way, I am deeply and desperately in love with.
Great.
It worked great at a shop. I took it home. It wouldn't boot. I brought it back. It worked. I took it home and it wouldn't boot. And I thought, what's different? The only different thing was I had a USB hub that I plugged in when I got home. I unplugged that. It worked fine. The USB hub was a problem.
We've seen that with keyboards. It works fine in our shop. Take it home. It doesn't work because they plug their keyboard back into it. It doesn't make any sense that a keyboard would screw up the computer from booting, but it can.
That happens.
Yep. All right. I feel so much better now that I purged. Our next caller is Michael from Alba, New York. Welcome, Michael.
Yes.
Where's Alba?
Alma. E-L-M-A.
Oh. Alma.
About 20 miles east of Buffalo.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Now, I hope I don't get the chastisement that I just heard.
Our blood is up now, Michael.
I am not on the internet yet, and I would like to at some time.
Oh, you're the one.
There's more than that. I heard there's about 40% of the household
that's not on it.
Something like that. Anyway, every time I listen to you guys, it's another reason why I don't want to get on the internet. Well, no, with all the problems.
Yes, I agree.
So quite some time ago, I thought I had the answer, and that was to use just a separate hard drive to work the internet with.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have one of the newer computers that you guys were just talking about, the dual core.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And it has the thing they call the USB port.
Yeah.
And I did get an external hard drive, but what I want to know is, can I put an operating system just on that hard drive and use that just for the internet?
It depends. Some computers will boot a USB hard drive and some won't.
Yeah.
It depends on your specific BIOS.
Okay.
If you go into your BIOS, you'll find a startup order list where you can start. You tell it you want to start the CD, the floppy, the hard drive.
Yes, we looked at that. My nephew is computer savvy. I'm not. And we had a 1 gigabyte jump drive plugged into that port. And it recognized that as a drive, and it put that on the list if we wanted to use that to boot up.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that we could do that.
Yes, here's the other problem. Even if you boot up from that external drive, it's going to mount the drives you own as like D, E, F, or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you're on the web and you get a virus that goes to more than just the C drive, it will still hit your drives.
Well, my way around that, and this was with the older computers that I thought I was going to do, was to disable all the drives except the one that I'm using. And my way of doing it was I was just actually going to put a physical switch in the DC supply that supplied those drives.
Yep.
I know there's a whole bunch of cables for information, but I'm taking it for granted that if you don't have the 6 or 12 volts DC power going to that drive, nothing
yes, that's
is
exactly
work.
Correct.
Michael,
it sounds like you'd be better off with a cheap second PC.
Yeah, that's I was going to say.
Okay, that was my other
thing. Yeah. You could get a second box, use a KVM switch. So you only got to deal with one keyboard, one mouse.
Okay.
KVM is short for keyboard, video, and mouse. You plug all those three from each of the two computers into the box, and then you have one monitor one keyboard, one mouse, and then you can just switch back and forth using that KVM switch.
And this way, you just got one separate box. If it gets contaminated, oh well, it's not going to interfere with your other stuff.
And of course, the even better step would to be not run Windows, get a Unix computer or a Mac computer, and you're less susceptible to mess on the internet.
Oh, okay.
That's true. So if you get a Mac, even a Mac Mini, if what you're doing is like email and surfing, a Mac Mini is a great machine. Similarly, a cheap system running, say, Ubuntu Linux would do much the same thing. And so you'd be safer yet and still able to do those things.
Okay. That sounds a lot simpler.
Yeah.
There you go.
I thank you, gentlemen.
All righty.
No, thank you. It's been a very long time since we've heard somebody talk about opening their machines, soldering switches onto
things. I mean, all that work and effort, I mean...
God bless him that he's willing to do it. It's just that isn't really necessary.
We almost need something like the web TV, but that really worked. Able to a simple small appliance to get on the internet, send basic email and look
the OLPC.
Yeah,
one laptop per child, $150. And it's a little device that won't do much, but will do that. Now,
you got to hand crank it to get
the power? No, you don't have to hand crank
them.
That's
the other one.
It's the same one. You can if you want to. It comes in multiple configurations.
Ah, you can get a real power supply?
You get a real power supply.
You can hand crank it.
It's a floor-mounted power supply, as it was on the Apple IIc.
Four squirrels in a cage running
around.
That's
right. All right, our next caller is Chris from Benfield, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Hey, my question is, what's the easiest, most versatile, and less memory-intensive way to back up your hard drive?
Wow.
Drag a file from one drive to another.
No, I mean, back up the hard drive so that if it fails, you've got like a separate archived copy of it backed up.
Isn't an easy, unobtrusive way.
Yeah, Ghost is a good program.
If you're talking about backing up your entire hard drive, including the operating system, then you're looking at a product like Ghost.
Which you boot from a separate disk, and then it can back up your OS.
If you're talking about just backing up your documents... That's way easier.
Usually what I recommend doing, because anytime your system crashes, that's Windows' way of telling you, well, you needed to clean it out and start from new.
Well, also, it's ridiculous to back up your entire hard drive just to save two extra files.
Yeah. And a lot of stuff, that could be, when you're backing up the entire system, anything that was deleted or anything else or making it slow and all that, you're just putting that back on when you restore.
Right.
Instead of starting for fresh.
Right, and that's the big issue with Ghost is that it backs up your whole hard drive, which is good. But the next time you want to back up, as Nick said, you change two files and want to back up again, you have to back up your whole hard drive again.
Right.
With a regular backup program.
And none of that is fast, by the way, Chris.
With a regular backup program like Retrospect or Backup My PC or any Silver Lining or Silver Keeper, any of the other ones, you can have an external hard drive to back up your documents. And then the second time you run it, it only backs up your changed documents. And then you take that hard drive off the computer and put it somewhere safe. So
it's advocating like active management of files that I really want to save, not operating system of the whole thing.
Okay, if you're just talking about that, there's two ways you can do it. One is to stick a USB hard drive onto the back of your machine. And then, I would recommend that to start with. And then you can either copy them by hand. Or you can run any of the programs Steve mentioned, Retrospect, any of those others, to on a timed basis, every hour, every 2 hours, every 15 minutes, I don't care what time, to back up your X directory, like your documents directory or wherever you keep your files, onto that USB drive, and then you'll always have a good copy.
Now there's another routine called mirroring that some people mistake for backup. you put a second hard drive in your computer and you set up a RAID mirror. So any data that is written to the first hard drive is automatically written to the second hard drive. It slows your machine down a little bit because it's doing two writes at once. But if one hard drive mechanically fails, you still have all your data on the second hard drive. But if you erase a file... It's erased from the second drive. If the Windows gets corrupted on one drive, it's corrupted on the second drive. So it's for mechanical failure, not for backup of data.
Right.
Right. And I'm actually using a RAID 0 configuration for speed.
Right, yeah. 0 for speed, 1 for integrity. 0 plus 1 with 4 drives is speed and integrity.
Right. RAID 5 is magic.
It's magic. Three drives, but it does both.
Right. Three drives, it does both. And oh, by the way, if a drive dies, you can replace it. It puts back all the stuff that you lost on the other drive without you even worrying about it. RAID 5 is magic.
Yeah.
Pure and unadulterated magic. But I would suggest that the simplest and easiest way to do it is get a USB drive, plug it into the back of your machine, run a program like Retrospect or one of the others, and set it up to automatically, regularly back up your data directories.
A lot of the USB retail packs, Western Digital, Maxtor, you know, Seagate, come with their own backup software.
Right. So you can use any one of those as well.
Well, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Thank you. All right. Our next caller would be Doug from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm multitasking here. I'm launching my boat while I'm talking to you guys. That's pretty scary.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Do we get a ride?
Sure.
Excellent.
It's a steamboat in the Erie Canal.
Now, oh, yes.
Two simple quick questions. You guys were talking about archival CDs and DVDs, and we talked about the Kodak Gold as being a good brand. Do they make, I do all my DVD movies, and then I print them with my, you know, Epson inkjet. Do they make a printable good archival DVD?
I don't know offhand.
I don't think so.
But you could get printable labels that you then stick on the disc.
But I've been told you don't want to use labels in a. It's okay to use labels on CDs, but not on DVDs because they get too hot and they come unglued and all that stuff.
And the thickness sometimes is a problem.
So, I mean, I don't use Sharpie markers, but I do use inkjet printed DVDs, and I think I get them, you know, online.
I don't know if LightScribe.
Yeah, that's the new technology, is LightScribe from HP, and a lot of DVD burners have it on now. After you burn your data, you put the disc in the other way, upside down. It uses the same laser and actually etches a label on the disc with a laser.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of that. I happen to like the pretty color-printed ones.
They're working
on
color versions.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll look into that. Okay, the other question is, my current system, I do a lot of video editing. My current system is about a 1.5 gigahertz with a gig of RAM. And my question is, I currently have an ATI all-in Wonder board in the, it's probably in the AGP slot, and I use that for both my video board and my TV tuner.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to a new system, I'm kind of seeing that maybe what I want to do is buy a good video board for the PCI Express slot, and then for the TV tuner functionality, either an external TV tuner or just a separate TV tuner board, rather than spending the $300 or $400.
I don't know that I'd go external, but certainly a separate TV tuner
separate
board
would be better.
So it's not relying so much on the computer's processor to do its processing.
Less stress on it.
Yeah, I mean, I capture off the TV every once in a while to go down to my little Rover video player, but I most of the time the board itself needs to be upgraded.
Well, and
it's taking forever to render videos.
A lot of times, there's also the price difference. We sell the Elgato ITV products for watching and recording TV on your computer. The $300 model has a hardware encoder in it. The $200 model uses your computer to encode. So do you want good quality or do you want cheaper? So
yeah,
right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, with 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These victims were shot at.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this, at 43 minutes after the hour, is Soundbites. Now, before we get back to the phones or anything else, I want to mention to Jay that we've got the link for that AGP 440 hang up on our website at soundbites.org. And Michael, when you do get on the internet, if you buy a Windows machine, make sure the first place you go is securitytango.com. Go to securitytango.com and dance the Security Tango, get everything running. In fact, one of the things you should do is not run Internet Explorer, but run Firefox. And on the Security Tango website, there's a link to the Firefox with the Google toolbar for downloading and installing. The Google toolbar, by the way, solves a problem everybody's been complaining about in the forums. The Google toolbar has a spell checker in it, so that you can check your spelling before you upload something. So I thought I should mention that. In the news, Vista Gaming, we actually talked about this a little earlier. Vista, according to Microsoft, gaming under Vista will be 10 to 15% slower than under XP, and that's mostly because you have to load the 3D desktop all the time. You won't any new games that come out for DirectX 10 will not be runnable under Windows XP at all, under any version of Windows but Vista. So even a new game like Crysis, which is the first DirectX 10 title, won't run under XP, and even if it's called an XP 10 game and a DX 10 game, it won't be much DirectX 10 in far of that. So if you're playing anything, you know, Battlefield 2, Fear, whatever, Call of Duty, you're going to get lower frame rates under Vista. It's kind of a take it or leave it deal, I guess. But if you've got a machine that's powerful enough to run that 3D desktop, it kind of looks sexy. But that's you pay for that by having slower frame rates in your games.
Just a conspiracy to make you update all your old software.
Even with the updates, they say even DirectX 10 versions will be 10 to 15% slower.
Right, the developers have to upgrade their software.
No, even after that.
Right, so they can't use DirectX 10. They have to, what, OpenGL?
You don't get any of that stuff. You get DirectX 10, that's what you get. And gaming under Vista will be 10 to 15% slower than it will under Windows XP.
Oh, that's going to be a big incentive.
Yeah, a lot of people are going to jump on that old bandwagon right away. Our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question? Rich, are you there?
Hello?
Talk to me, Rich. Talk to me. Are you there?
Okay, I'm here.
All right.
Okay, Nick, here's what I've got. I've got three computers all networked together. An old one is running Windows 98. I have a new laptop that runs XP Home Edition. And I have a desktop that runs XP Media Center Edition. I use Microsoft Works database and a couple of documents that I go to print out. The margins are different on the different computers.
What printers are defined on each computer?
I only have one printer, and that's shared on the network. And that's a one of these 3-in-1s, HP 3-in-1 printer, copier, fax, scanner.
Yeah, we've seen that problem when you go to different printers because each printer has its own printable area.
Well, the other question is, are you using the same printer driver on each of the three machines? In other words, for example, here's a problem that I found. I have an HP 1220.
Okay.
On one machine, I had the HP 1220 driver loaded. On another machine, I had the HP 1200 driver loaded.
1200 series, probably.
Series. Yep. And in another one, I had an 1100 series driver loaded.
Especially with different OSs, they may not make new enough driver.
Right, exactly. 98. The 1100 series and the 1220 printed perfectly, but the one in the middle, the 1200 series driver, didn't.
And another thing to check on is in your page setup on each computer, make sure you've got letter selected, because sometimes some printers give you letter and letter small that has different margins on it.
And also some of them, for some reason, default to A4 paper, which is a European standard, which is completely different.
Yeah.
And especially the driver for 98 versus XP, let alone media, are probably totally different.
And make sure they're all set to inches, not the metric system.
Is it the same version of Microsoft Works on each computer?
Yep, check that. Also went into all the printer folders, made sure all the settings were the same.
Is this printer being shared off a machine or directly on the network?
It's hooked up to the new desktop that is the Windows XP Media Center.
Try plugging it into
wireless, and actually the old computer that's running Windows 98, I have that shut right down to try to figure out this problem.
Try plugging the printer into a different printer, a different computer, and see where the problem
the
moves.
Other thing is that under XP you're supposed to be able to make a disk, right?
Yeah.
Doing that. Make the disk that lets you share the printer
from the media
on machines. All right, we're going to take another break. It's 49 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
If it's the weekend.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on
1180. Well, you know what, Nick?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. You know, speaking of HD, you sound even more lovely in HD.
Do I? I haven't heard me in HD. But I have to admit, I must sound magnificent.
Who sells HD AM radios?
That's a big push right now.
There's a big push for them. They're coming out.
They're coming out. Get one. You need one.
They're saying AM will sound like FM quality, and FM will sound like CD quality as far as music and everything.
And CDs will still sound like CD quality.
Yeah.
So you're kind of done.
The question is, though, is how many people are really going to run out and buy HD radios when they're starting at $300 to $400 for a home unit?
That's this year. Next year, they'll be $20.
Well, it's the same thing with the HD DVDs. The HD DVD is $500. The Blu-ray DVD is $1,000. Next year, it'll be half that. And the year after that, they'll have merged together into one format.
Well, right. Do you remember when DVD players were $200 to $300? And it's like now you can walk into
I remember when a DVD recorder was $5,000.
I remember paying $50 for an AM radio that only got like six stations and then badly.
And then you had to solder it together yourself, right?
Exactly. That was the fun part.
No, it's just it's scary that you can walk into the store and get a DVD player for $20 now.
Yeah. They're loss leaders now. Here, take this.
Right.
Oh, you're buying batteries? Here, have a DVD player.
Right.
Come on. Take a hike. Our next caller is Ken from Shortsville. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Well, I've got a computer that's trying to tell me something here, and maybe you guys can help me out.
Sure.
It has decided to randomly shut down and reboot on occasion, and I finally noticed a pattern that it will shut down whenever I want to run a video off the internet. Sometimes it'll run, sometimes it'll shut down, but I also have an old CompuServe account. Whenever I exit that CompuServe program, it always shuts down and reboots.
Here's the first thing you need to do is to go to memtest86.com.
Yep. Okay.
And download their memory tester. You can download it either as a bootable CD or a bootable floppy. Make the CD, make the floppy, follow the directions. Reboot into that and let it run for about 24 hours.
Okay.
That will tell you whether the memory is bad. I suspect your problem is either going to be memory or power supply. But I suspect memory because it happens when you do memory-intensive things like video or CompuServe.
Yeah. And I just added a memory chip.
And that's when it started. See? Us what changed, do you, Ken? Yeah.
Take that chip back out, see what happens.
Took a while to figure out the pattern, because it was just a random thing.
It could be that you got two different types of memory. In other words, two different speeds.
It may also be as simple as the card isn't seated tight enough.
Well, I went back in and did all that because that was my first...
Tell you what, take the new one out. And see if the pattern goes away.
And if you take the old one out and put just the new one in, it'll probably crash more. Because now it doesn't have good RAM to work with.
If the RAM chip was bad, yeah.
But I can leave the 512 in, take the 256 out, and see if...
I can
live with the 512.
Right. Well, the reality is it's either a bad chip or it's
incompatibility.
Incompatible RAM. So one way or the other, that's what you need to do. All right?
I want to back up half a stack. The Apple Cider Users Group meeting is this week, Wednesday, the 11th, 7 o'clock at East High School, corner of Main and Culver. And we're going to be talking about useful peripherals. A lot of people buy their computer, but then they can do so much more by adding these cool little things separately. Caller earlier mentioned the all-in-one printers. For $99 now, you can get a printer, copier, scanner.
Yeah.
And they're really decent. It used to be the all-in-ones was a blah printer and a blah scanner, but now they're really pretty decent.
For a few hundred bucks, you can get a pretty decent color printer.
Yeah. And one of the cool things I'm hoping someone got around to getting is a USB turntable. For all of our old timers that still have albums, it's a pain to digitize the albums into the computer because you got to get the preamps and you got to get the cables and the software. Well, here's a USB turntable. It's a regular turntable with a USB port on it. You plug it into your computer and you hit record.
How much is that?
$140.
That is way worth it. I have so much vinyl that needs to be... Oh, that's a great toy. The toy I wanted, if anybody's looking to buy
Rob's
me something...
Rob's head looks like a bobble doll.
That's crazy because, at the other establishment I work for, we get that a lot. A lot of people saying, I have all of this vinyl at home, stuff that just hasn't been reissued to CD.
$150.
I want to get it on my computer.
Yep. $150. Now you can do it.
Steve, send me the link, will you? Actually,
me too.
Put it up online.
I want it. Other thing is I want, and if anybody's looking to buy me a present, here's the present to get. They make a USB rocket launcher. Little Nerf rockets. You get a little program that lets you aim and fire them. I have to have this.
It is insane what you can hook
that
up to your
USB. That could be dangerous entering your office.
That's the point. We want it to be dangerous. Well, it appears that we are indeed done for another week. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. We were a little nuts this week, I think. Call next week. The same thing happens. Call early. Call early. Call often. Just like voting in Chicago, do it early and often. We're going to be back next week, of course. We don't forget to vote in the poll. Please vote in the poll. So far, we've got 81 votes. We need more. And we'll be, that's the one I want, the USB air darts. That's what I want. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. Rob does the hard job. He keeps us all on the straight and narrow. Tries, at least. You can see this week he failed utterly to do that. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Thanks. It's 1180 WHAM.